As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Family entertainment. That's the future, Odo. There's a fortune to be made. Little hollow creatures running around. Rides and games for the kiddies. Ferengi standing in every doorway, selling useless souvenirs.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Positively Trek Book Club, where we take a look at new books and comics from the Star Trek universe. And with me today in this special episode, and I'm calling it a special episode because Deep Space Nine is my favorite. So for this special episode with me is Brandi Jackala. Brandi, how's it going?
I am doing very well, and I'm very excited to be back. I need to talk about comics.
Yay. Well, we are definitely, this is a year of talking about comics at this point, and we're only in March, and I'm so excited for what's still to come. But in this episode, we are talking about the Deep Space Nine IDW limited run series, The Dog of War, which recently, February 13th, got released as a graphic novel format. But it's a collection of five issues that all came out in 2023. Okay, so first of all, I didn't read these when they came out, which is shocking because I'm a Deep Space Nine person. I'm a dog person. I think corgis are adorable. And if you've seen the covers to any of the issues in this series, you know it centers around this really cute corgi and Deep Space Nine. So it's in my wheelhouse. I don't know how I didn't read these when they came out, but that has been rectified.
Yes, yes. Corgis are adorable. They have these long little bodies and these short stubby legs and their little faces. You just want to kiss them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I like I said, a dog person. I love dogs. And yeah, corgis are just, they're so adorable. So yeah, we're going to be talking about all five issues in this series because basically we're covering the graphic novel. So, you know, getting caught up on all these comics like we have been, but taking a little bit of a break from the ongoing Star Trek and Star Trek Defiant series for this little Deep Space Nine side quest, which was kind of marketed, I noticed, as a lost episode of Deep Space Nine. Which I could see this working as an episode. So good marketing. Good job, guys.
Absolutely. And especially the time period in which it takes place. It just, it's really quite impressive how they worked this in.
Absolutely. So yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, when it takes place, which is during season six at kind of the height of the Dominion War. We know it takes place after the episode In the Pale Moonlight because the Romulans have joined the war. And by all accounts, it sounds like just after In the Pale Moonlight. And at one point in, I think it's issue two, they make mention of a battle at Kalandra that went disastrously, which I can't remember which episode it's in, but that is mentioned in a DS9 episode. So, you know, they're doing a really good job of kind of wedging it in there and using all of the tropes and the things from that period of Deep Space Nine. We've got Vic Fontaine in here. We've got the war effort going on, being a big concern of Starfleet and the Federation. And all of that kind of coming together to really place this in the timeline, which, you know, as a huge Trekkie who pays attention to all those minute little details, I really appreciate that.
Agreed. I think that it could have gone horribly wrong with them putting it in this particular part of the storyline. And yet, the way that they just make it work so thoroughly is, again, it's impressive. I was really pleased with how they positioned this comic to tell this story in this particular time period, because there's a lot going on, and if you make a mistake on one of your references, people are going to know it.
And for the most part, they do a very good job in this. So it's written by Mike Chen, with art by Angel Hernandez. The writing and the art are things that I think we're both going to be commenting on a lot as we go through these. Colors are by Nick Filardi and letters by Neil Iwatake. And we don't usually go through all these credits here, but I'm going to give a huge shout out to edits by Heather Antos and editorial assist by Vanessa Reel, because those details that you talk about, a lot of those are down to the editing. So I bet you that they had a great deal to do with getting that all accurate. So kudos to everybody involved in this.
Yeah, let's hear it for the ladies.
Hear, hear. Absolutely. The one thing I will say, I have one niggle as far as how it looks, and this is like the uber nerdy whatever. A few times in these issues, we see a medical tricorder, and it's the old school medical tricorder, not that they would have been using in season 6 of Deep Space Nine. So just getting that out of the way, if you're, you know, too ridiculously nerdy like most Star Trek fans, you likely noticed that, and I noticed it too. But that's okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was me complaining about old Spock doing the Vulcan salute wrong. His thumb turned in. It's like, who let this happen? So, you know, I'm there with you, man. I get it.
We all have our things, for sure.
We do.
So let's jump in with issue number one. We've got, like we said, at the height of the Dominion War, there's a Starfleet team aboard the station to assess if any of the Cardassian technology can be salvaged. And this, of course, is after the Cardassians and the Dominion recently retook the station and Starfleet took it back. So, hey, did they leave any goodies for us that we can use in the war effort and figure out their systems? Which presents an interesting thought, because I've always thought that just the possession of the former Tarok Nor must have been like an intelligence coup for Starfleet, right? Like getting their hands on all this. Like, they took anything of value is what O'Brien said. But even just the hardware and that, like, I bet there was like a team of Starfleet psychologists like looking into the Cardassian mindset just from the architecture and the layout of panels and that kind of thing.
Agree. That's a very good point.
We've got this this team aboard, like I said, and they detect a component that they weren't expecting, a Borg component of some kind. They're wondering what this is all about. Borg is something that hasn't really figured much into Deep Space Nine, other than, of course, Sisko's backstory in the pilot, which we get reference to here, with this art style that pops up a lot throughout these issues that I love, where people are having a conversation in the present day, and they're kind of like awash in the memories of something that happened in the past or something of import. So here we see Sisko's face, but around him is an explosion and people dying aboard the Saratoga. And like later we'll get Sisko and Ross talking about the war, and like fading in the background behind them is like a map of the quadrant and the, so what's on their mind? What's, you know, not necessarily literally happening in the scene, but what is the subtext of what they're talking about? And I love that. I think that's a really cool technique here.
Well, agreed, because people can multitask in their brains. You can hear a certain song and suddenly you are awash in something that happened 30 years ago, and that song happened to be playing at the time. So it's, you never know what can trigger such a memory, and what they're going through right now is full of triggers. Mm-hmm. So full of triggers. So of course, the minute we find out there's something Borg, what is Sisko going to be remembering?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that you say the mind can multitask given what happens in this story. That's
yeah, it can. Because, well, and it depends on the mind as well, because I have about a million thoughts every second, and just sorting through them to figure out which one I'm going to focus on can be a challenge at some time. But yeah, I can think about a bunch of different things at once, but can I do a bunch of different things at once? Not so much. The mental aspect is so much faster.
Yeah, you need a Borg component for that.
Yeah, exactly. But it'll probably kill me because my body can't do it. And my body's just like, nah, we're not on board.
Yeah. Well, we get ahead of ourselves, though. We'll get there for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, they detect this component. It turns out to be in one of Quark's holosuites. So they investigate this, and we come upon Vic Fontaine in a dog park with a whole bunch of dogs. And of course, at the center is this gorgeous little corgi. But, I mean, like, shout out to all the little puppers in this shot. That's amazing.
So cute. I just want to love all of them.
But Quark ends the program, but this one corgi remains, along with all of these various things that we find out have been given to Quark as collateral for the sale of this this dog, I guess. Odo's like, computer, remove the furry thing, and it's like, oh no, it's a real dog, it's not disappearing. But it's a purebred corgi, it's extremely valuable, and it's named Latinum by Quark because he wants to remind himself, and he needs to remind himself, that the dog is just merchandise and not to get attached, which is our first little hint that maybe Quark is getting a little attached.
Yeah, well, it's even more valuable than Latinum because it's a genetically perfect dog. Mm-hmm. And they just don't exist anymore. They're you can't find purebreds and genetically perfect anything when it comes to a lot of earth mammals. So it's quite a feat in that, you know, that far into the future. Just considering what we have right now, it's really hard to find a genetically perfect corgi. Just imagine after all that happens for the next, you know, 300 years or whatnot. Yeah, it's an impressive thing. So, of course, somebody's going to pay top dollar for it. And even then, the dog is probably worth more. But he's just a little guy that wants to be happy.
It's pretty adorable. And over the course of these issues, we're going to see, like, the effect this dog has on the people around him, including Quark, and maybe especially Quark. But it's really fun to see. I want to take this moment to call out the art by Angel Hernandez, because it's really good. Like, it's simplified. It's not incredibly detailed, but all of the characters look so much like themselves. Like, if you look at the scene where Bashir is examining Latinum, his face, like, it's, there's, the features are soft, but it's so undeniably Bashir. Mm-hmm. It's so good. And Quark is nailed on every panel in this too. He's really, really good.
Yes. I agree. I appreciated the fact that it wasn't, I mean, because honestly, you don't have time to do super detailed stuff on faces when it comes to a Star Trek comic, because you've got to do super detailed inanimate stuff. So I appreciated that you could still open any page and know exactly who the characters were without any dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So it, and that's not easy to do with that style. So yeah, well, very well done.
So this Borg component, Starfleet wants it. Sisko is reluctant to turn it over because of his past with the Borg and wants to make sure that it's going to be safe and it's not going to compromise Starfleet in any way. But Starfleet, through Admiral Ross, is kind of pushing hard to get their hands on this component. But Sisko is kind of putting his foot down here. And in the meantime, in the holosuite, we have Quark setting up Deep Space K-9, where people can hang out with the dog. And it is so, there's so many little scenes of like Vic Fontaine running around with the dog. Garrick?
Yes!
So thrilled to be with this little pupper.
His face! Garrick's face! Just loved it.
So good. And at a bit of urging from Kira, Odo even shapeshifts into another corgi and runs around with Latinum, which was adorable.
So cute. I can hear him in my going, fine. Just.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. It's like I could hear it. I could hear his protestations.
So Quark is, like I said, he names the dog to remind himself that, you know, it's just profit, don't get attached. And he thinks maybe he'll charge people to walk him, a relaxing dog walk only at Quark's. And Dax is like, don't even think about it. Meanwhile, back with Sisko, you know, he's trying to figure out this device, trying to weigh the pros and cons. Nice bit of continuity here where O'Brien brings up Barclay being connected to the Enterprise and controlling the ship and making all these calculations at incredible speeds and thinking the Borg component might do something similar. And Sisko says he's going to be the one to test it, though. He can't give it to Starfleet. He's going to try it out himself.
Yeah, and that's where it kind of starts being called into question. Is Sisko doing this because of his trauma from the Borg, or is he being reasonable?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of leaving the decision up to the reader at this point. It's like, is he doing this because of his bias, or is he doing this because he actually thinks it's the right thing to do?
And again, I love this artwork where, you know, he puts on the device and behind him you see, you know, a map, a war map, because that's what he's like. What will it take to secure the Alpha Quadrant, to defeat the Dominion? Will it take our humanity? And then that changes into a shot of Locutus, kind of mirroring how Sisko looks with this Borg component on, right?
So good.
He could lose himself to this thing.
Yeah, and he knows it.
Yeah, and I mean, getting into issue number two, so, you know, that's kind of where issue number one ends, but issue number two, you're right, he does know it. He has this conversation with Dax, where Dax kind of says, your personal history with the Borg creates an internal conflict with this, and, you know, maybe Starfleet should be the one to do this. And Sisko acknowledges, he says, I know my history with the Borg, and that is why I need to do this. So he's acknowledging it, but it may still kind of be blinding him and making him think he has, you know, a special mission. And maybe he does have a special mission to protect Starfleet from this thing. But there's a lot of personal stakes going into this for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, most people don't come out of a Borg attack alive. So... Mm-hmm. There can't be a whole bunch of people in Starfleet who knows what it's like to actually face the Borg and still be alive, I should add. So I kind of get where, I get where he's coming from. But at this point in the comic, I'm still not 100% convinced that he's not leaning heavily on his bias.
So, yeah, getting into issue number two, we've got... Quark warming to Latinum, you know, calling him a good listener because he's, you know, for the benefit of the reader, outlining his issues and what's going on. And Latinum's just sitting there listening like a good boy. But meanwhile, Bashir and O'Brien are going to take part in this holodeck adventure, which is this like a World War III thing? Like, what is this? This is kind of techno-futuristic from our perspective. Kind of post-apocalyptic, war-torn thing. It didn't seem their usual fare. And Bashir is very reluctant. But O'Brien's like, no, it's not real. This will get us away from the war. But they're fighting another war. And I think Bashir is not too keen on it.
You know, I don't blame him in that regard. Because I also thought it was a weird way to blow off steam. And then I remembered... What do I do when I need to blow off some aggressive feelings? I play things like Fallout 4, where I can kill a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So I kind of get both sides of it. I get Miles's reasons for wanting to do it, and I also get Bashir's hesitation.
Yeah, back in the day when I was younger, I haven't done this in a long time, but it's not my favorite game anymore, but Grand Theft Auto back in the day when I had a really bad day, I would just go on rampages and be a horrible person behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more of a Saints Row gal myself, so... Mm,
Yeah.
So I do enjoy, you know, running people over with vehicles and killing bad people.
Oh, yes.
Even though, technically, I'm always a bad person, too, because I'm a freaking gang leader.
So, again, in this scene, we have another one of these moments with Bashir and O'Brien talking about going into the holodeck, and behind them... the casualty list from the war, right? So the subtext again of what's going on here. I love that. And that's where we also get the mention of Kalandra, this disastrous battle where the Federation, Romulans and Klingons couldn't coordinate very well and kind of stepped on each other's toes and were soundly defeated by the Dominion. So it's weighing heavily on everyone's mind, including Sisko's, who's, you know, trying to figure out if this device could have maybe helped out, right? It could coordinate them all. Is that worth the risk, though?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is it worth the risk? Of course, me, personally, the minute that I saw the thing, I'm like, no, 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 destroy it. Just destroy it. Just destroy it. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the story wouldn't have gone the same way.
Exactly. It'd be very short. Roll credits. And somehow Latinum was saved.
Which is another funny thing because, you know, they're talking about walking the dog. And I'm like, you know what dogs do on a walk, right? Who's cleaning that up?
Well, if it was the Enterprise, they would say the ship cleans itself. I don't know if Deep Space Nine's the same. I hope so, but yeah.
One would think that the Cardassians wouldn't want to bother with menial tasks such as cleaning. So...
unless when they controlled the station, they just had the Bajorans deal with it.
Mm, there's that too.
Which is possible.
They probably did that. It's like, what are Cardassian pets like?
Well, they have the Voles. I don't think they're really pets.
No, I wouldn't call them pets.
I feel like Garrick had a creature he rode as a boy. I can't remember.
We don't really know much about those pets, do we?
Yeah.
No real mentions of them. Anyway, yeah.
So... Dax has had a colleague at the Daystrom Institute analyze this Borg component.
This is the thing I laughed about. Thank you for bringing it up.
This was so cool. The analysis by Dr. Aaron McDonald at the Daystrom Institute. Beautiful shout out to the current science advisor for the Star Trek shows. That was beautiful.
It was. I laughed out loud. It was so delightful to see that.
I really like that. There's a lot of little cute shout outs, but this one was the one that tickled me the most in this. This was really nice.
Nice. Very nice.
Sisko, like I said, feels he has no choice but to do this himself. He feels that his history with the Borg makes him the perfect man to analyze this component. Kind of interesting parallels with Picard and his dealings with the Borg too, right? First contact. Where Starfleet didn't want to put him in that position. And Riker says, that's ridiculous. Your experience with the Borg makes you the perfect man to lead this fight. But so Sisko feels kind of that way about himself. But Dax is a little skeptical, kind of trying to be a voice of reason here too. So,
well, and that's what a good friend does.
So we have this scene with Quark and Vic in Deep Space K-9. And we see that Quark is, again, still warming to Latinum a little bit. Warming to Latinum. I don't mean the currency. He's very warm to to that. I mean the dog, of course. The broker, who is the person Quark's been dealing with in all of this, wants the Borg component back, apparently. But Quark is kind of dismissing this, saying, like, it's Starfleet's problem now. They confiscated it. They can figure it out. Vic is a little skeptical, though. He says, I've dealt with mob bosses before. It never ends well.
Yeah. Quark should have listened.
It's interesting that he kind of dismisses that whole thing for most of these, and then that comes back to bite them all in the butt later, for sure.
Yeah, well, Quark's not exactly on speaking terms with his conscience, so this is hardly surprising.
Fair enough. So back to Bashir and O'Brien's war-torn Holosuite adventure. I love that they've brought Latinum with them on this adventure, and it's just like trotting along beside them in this, you know, Fallout-esque scenario, I guess. That's a cute visual. He seems to be having the time of his life.
His little legs.
Well, as Bashir says, might be pretty good in a Jeffrey's tube, you know. But Sisko and Dax show up and interrupt their program because I guess there's, you know, no other holosuites. Or they just want to use O'Brien, maybe. That's why they go in there. But they're going to test this Borg component against, I guess, a bunch of Borg with the holosuite safeties turned off. Which, that's always a good idea, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Not... Absolutely not. Not a good idea.
It's okay. Dax is there with a big gun.
Yeah, sure. One person with a big gun against a bunch of Borg with the holodeck safeties turned off. Yep, that's a stellar plan.
Well, it's an interesting scene because it's pretty extended. It goes on for quite a while with the Borg continuing to attack and Sisko trying to interface with this device. And as it goes, he gets more and more information on what the Borg are doing, what's going on, how they're analyzing their attack, and eventually realizes that not only can he listen in on what's going on, he can control the systems. So he is able to take control of the Borg, basically. Definitely a very powerful piece of equipment here.
Mm-hmm. And I want to know who built it and why.
But beyond taking control of the Borg in the simulation, his mind then goes to the holodeck controls, or the holosuite controls, and he can control that. And then from there to the rest of the station. And from there to the ships docked at the station. So anything connected, he's able to interface with and control. Yeah, powerful and dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Again, everybody is falling in love with Latinum, except maybe Garak. Garak likes him, but doesn't trust him. Because never trust any creature that adorable. I'd much rather spend time with Cardassian Regnars, which is some sort of Cardassian creature that we've heard of before. I can't remember the context, but maybe pets, but they sound more ferocious than pets, maybe.
Yeah, well, Garak's not completely wrong because Mipsy.
That's a good call. Good call. So yeah, everyone's falling in love with this dog, though. It's becoming like Deep Space Nine's mascot almost. But meanwhile, Admiral Ross is pushing Sisko even harder to turn over this device, which, you know, Sisko buries his face in his hands over. He's not happy about that. But that's not the only piece of bad news we get in this, because it turns out that the person who wants to buy Latinum is this so-called rescuer, but he's actually a poacher. And there's even some mention of taxidermy.
Oh, no.
So Quark says, they're going to kill Laddie? Which, by the way, his nickname for Latinum, Laddie, I think is great.
Yeah, because it sounds very much like Laddie, which is definitely a dog sort of thing, especially, you know, in Scotland and whatnot. But I think it's, I love it. Laddie is perfect.
So, yeah, that's issue two. That's the cliffhanger we're left on. Again, Starfleet pushing for this component and Quark's fearing for the future of Latinum, which I feel like a couple issues ago he wouldn't have cared. And now he loves this dog.
Well, how can you not?
Exactly.
I mean, how can you not? Just look at his little face.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This episode of Positively Trek is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. A special thank you to our Constitution class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Mirren, and Paul D. Kinnear. To help out with the podcast, visit patreon.com/positivelytrek, where for a small monthly donation, you can get early access to ad-free episodes, shout-outs, exclusive content, associate producer credits, and more. Thank you so much for listening, and live long and prosper. Well, issue 3 starts with this wonderful bit with Quark where he's wrestling with his conscience and he's doing the typical Quark thing where he's convincing himself, ah, no, Latinum, they're not going to kill Latinum. You know, it'll be fine. He's trying to convince himself of this, right? He's in denial. But then he goes to this going away party that everybody is throwing for Latinum. Big, huge banner. Have a nice trip, Latinum. And Quark's like, oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Oh, such a good boy.
Oh, he's not in a good place. They're singing, you know, for he's a jolly good puppy to Latinum. And Quark is getting more and more uncomfortable. And then he has to leave because, you know, he's made a decision. He's decided to contact this buyer and cancel the purchase of Laddie. But in this conversation, the buyer immediately starts out with, is there a problem preparing the Borg device? And you say, oh, that? No, Starfleet confiscated that. They have it now. It's out of my hands. And this guy's not happy about that. And Quark brings up that, like, he wants to delay the sale of Latinum for a few days. He just wants to be sure that... And then the transmission ends. All right, well, I'm sure that's fine then. Which, I kind of want to throttle Quark a little bit. Like, there's red flags here, buddy. Learn to read them.
Oh, it's not that he can't read them. He doesn't want to read them.
That's true, too. Yeah. And I mean, I guess that makes sense. Like, he's been dealing with shady characters for years, and that whole plausible deniability ability to just kind of block things out and look the other way has probably served him very well over the years. So, that makes sense. This whole first part of this issue is very much focused on Quark because, you know, his wrestling with this. He's having this nightmare where these dogs are showing up in his bar, rare, valuable signs on them, and more dogs to sell. What's going on? And there's these alarms going off, which turns out to be real. He wakes up and there's all these alarms going off. And this is a little bit of a callback to the season 3 DS9 episode Civil Defense with the much memed now Dukat, attention Bajoran workers. There's a insurrection in progress, lockdowns and all this stuff. So that has somehow been triggered by these intruders who've gotten aboard and made away with Latinum, as Quark finds out from Vic. So tragedy here.
It shall not stand.
But as they find out in the security office later, that's not the only thing that was taken. The other thing that was taken, of course, is this Borg component. So there's these two intruders. They've gotten aboard. They've got Laddie and they've got the Borg component. But Bashir is able to use the cheap piece of junk tracker that they put on Latinum to discover that the kidnappers are still aboard the station. And this is the part of the story where we realize Worf is still here. Oh yeah, Worf.
He does make a comment about how much Schlatty sheds, more so than Spot ever did on the Enterprise.
Yes, that's true. But it does feel a little bit like the writers were like, oh yeah, Worf, we should probably give him something to do at some point.
Whoops, where has he been? He was on a shuttle mission with one of the runabouts. It's fine.
Well, we know that he sneezed a lot when he had to look after Spot, so maybe... With Latinum, he was just like, every time he walked into the room, he's like, oh, nope.
Well, if it was worse than spot shedding, definitely.
He'd just exactly. Be like, But Worf is the one who's on the tail of these intruders, chasing them with a phaser rifle. And we get a bit of action in here. There's grenades being thrown and people taking fire and that sort of thing. But eventually the two of them do manage to beam out and escape with Latinum and this Borg device.
But you know, we always knew it was going to happen, didn't we? Mm-hmm. Because you don't put something like that in an episode or a comic or anything like that, and then nothing ever happens to it. It's kind of like, it's a Chekhov's gun. You showed me the dog. We know the dog is supposed to go to this person, the dog is going to be taken. We know this. Same thing with the Borg device. Somebody wants the Borg device back. Was it all going to end up, oh no, we destroyed the Borg device and now Laddie is going to live happily ever after with Vic in the holodeck? No, of course it's not going to go that way.
No, we're going to have some stumbles before we get to the end, for sure. And these brokers seem like pretty nasty news. But there was one person who tried to warn Quark about them early on, and he completely dismissed them. There's this animal rescue person that... And we find out her name is Alatia, or Alatia, I'm not sure. But she warns them. She tells Quark who these people are, and they're known as the Brokers on the Black Market. So... it turns out what they really want is information, and this is how they steal it. They use this device to scrape all the computer info and then sell that on the black market. Now, the funny thing is we see a bunch of like items that they deal in on this black market, and there's some familiar stuff. There's like Scotty's big scanner from the original series, Klingon duck tog, and Uhura's little ear transceiver thing. There's a Kelvin timeline phaser. How did they get their hands on that?
What? That was one of those things where I'm like, I'm not sure if that's what I think it is, but if it's what I think it is, who's hopping realities? What's going on here?
Well, the thing next to it might be an agonizer from the Mirror Universe. It looks like it's got an extra little thing on it, but it looks like it might. So maybe they do hop universes.
It's quite scary. Possible. They've given us two examples now of things that should not be in this universe. So, interesting.
Yeah, we won't get a follow-up on that, but It's definitely interesting.
You know what's not interesting? Their name.
Yeah, right?
The brokers on the black market. It's a little on the nose.
A little bit.
I mean, it does what it says on the tin, but...
Okay, that's your name, but what do you do?
We're the brokers on the black market.
And what is it that you do again?
We broker.
And where do you broker these things?
On the black market. Can you just see somebody actually doing that, being so naive, and they're just getting, the person they're questioning is just getting angrier and angrier and more frustrated.
This is why we made this our name, to avoid these conversations. Good God.
And it still doesn't work. We're going to have to workshop this, guys.
Yeah, they should have workshopped that name a little more, I think, because, it doesn't exactly inspire, like, it doesn't sound cool. It doesn't exactly help you if you're trying to hide from the authorities. Like, if that's what you put on your club jackets.
They're they're all wearing these big black jackets with the brokers of the black market on the back.
Oh, God. They're not the brightest bulbs in the...
I'm never going to get that image out of my head. No, that is just, that's in canon now in my brain.
This animal rights activist does have some information, though, and provides them with the schematics of the broker's ship, the one that they escaped with Latinum on. Oh, and also the board component, but mostly the dog. So the main thing, though, is that they got all the information out of Deep Space Nine's systems. And of course, Sisko is worried that that could be sold to, oh, I don't know, the Dominion, which, you know, that's not good. They're going to have to get that back. They've informed Starfleet, of course, and Starfleet's going to send a team after them. Sisko mentions, you know, also there's other things they took that we want to get back. And Ross is like, nope, the most important thing's the Borg component. That's all we're focused on. And Sisko's like, oh, hell no. I would really like to lead this team. I think we are in the best position to do this. We know them, all this stuff. Convinces Ross to lead the team, and the comic ends with Sisko saying, we're going to save our dog.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
I love that he's leading the mission because Admiral Ross, like, couldn't give two craps about the dog. And he's like, okay, no, we need to take this over.
He is a very good boy.
Absolutely. I do love the shot of them all walking to the Defiant to, yes, you know, get their dog back.
And of course, I'm looking at that and going, you're really just taking the entire main crew, really?
Well, what happens if
all of you die. I know, it's just, but that's one of those things that is always, you know, that's why when Star Trek Next Generation came about, and it turns out Captain Picard can't just go down to the planet all the time. And I just thought, no, that actually makes sense, because Who's the most important person on that ship? Oh, it's the captain. So mm-hmm. Why are you going to put the captain in danger? So, but taking the entire station bridge crew is just... Wow.
Well, actually, you know what's funny is usually they take Odo too, but they left him behind. So they left behind the security guy. That's the one person they left behind. I guess they don't think a shapeshifter would be useful in infiltrating an enemy ship or anything.
No, that absolutely would be the worst choice possible. What? Which is why? Why? Is it because he's not as enamored of the dog as everyone else? Is that it?
Yeah, he's like, I don't care.
just a dog.
You need a dog? I can be a dog.
Yeah, I can be.
You want me to be a dog on weekends? That's fine. I can do that.
Yeah, people can walk me. I will crap on the floor, and robots will clean it up. You know, I will do this for you if this will make you happy.
Would that be part of Odo then? Okay, no, I'm thinking too much into this. Nope. We're not going there.
Yep, we're getting too real.
Well, let's move on to issue number 4 then, which has the crew in the Defiant pursuing this ship, and like they're motivated to get this dog back. Oh yeah, and the other stuff that could spell doom for the entire Federation, but mostly the dog. I'm kidding. They're actually, their main priority, of course, is this information, but they want their good boy back. But yeah, this issue is mostly action sequences where we get them infiltrating the ship and Kira being pretty badass, taking out this Cardassian soldier. But again, just like Worf tracking the guys through the station, Dax finds corgi fur. Knows they're on the right trail.
Because he sheds a lot. They set that up earlier mm-hmm. on in the story. So yeah.
Absolutely. So they're making their way through, and I'm enjoying these character moments. Again, it's mostly action stuff, but like Jadzia, for example, has to get in and out of this room in a certain amount of time. But Emini was an Olympic gymnast, right? So we get some really graceful, amazing moves by Jadzia as she gets in, gets the Borg component, and gets out before the alarm goes off. Unfortunately, the corgi fur once again is a plot point here as it drops down and hits the floor and sets off the alarms. So
now, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it Imani who was mentioned in Trials and Tribulations by Dax?
I think so, yes. Yeah.
Because they had a hookup with McCoy.
Yep.
I just wanted to make sure that I remembered that correctly. Thank you.
He had the hands of a surgeon.
He did. He did.
So yeah, the alarms are going off. They've got to make their way through and figure out what information they have and all of this. And Sisko, of course, now has this Borg component and is able to connect. And so yeah, most of this episode is him going through, finding the information, connecting, taking out people by exploding consoles and shutting off power as various people in his crew are making their way through the ship and stuff and locating Latinum. But of course, it's all a big toll on Sisko. Like, this, the human body isn't designed to do that kind of work with the brain, right? So Bashir is getting very concerned.
Well, yeah, and that's why the Borg have these components, have these synthetic components, is to augment the body's ability to withstand the hive mind.
But lowly human Benjamin Sisko is having a tougher time with it, for sure. But Kira and Dax have located Latinum, and they break him out of his cage. But he kind of gets trapped behind some explosions and some fire and is too scared. He won't come out to them. And so they're at a bit of an impasse there. That's kind of where that part of the story is left for now at the end of this issue. Also, though, Sisko has all of the data that's stolen from Starfleet. He finds it and he deletes it. It's all gone. But he realized that there's a trail. It's been transmitted. It's going somewhere, and he realizes it's going to be sold to the Dominion.
Well, duh. I mean, who obviously is going to want that information the most?
Of course.
So, you know, from the brokers on the black market.
Yeah. I'm just picturing the conversation. It's like, Wayoon is like, and who is selling us this information? They're calling themselves the brokers on the black market. I'm sorry, they're calling themselves what? Do we really want to put our faith in these guys?
Yeah. Who can blame them? But, you know, you don't have to have imagination. You just have to have the goods, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Dominion could change their name to the Fascist Subjugators of the Galaxy.
There you go.
Nobody's going to do that.
No, and to just boldly name yourself exactly what you are, just that takes a lot of gall, really.
Mm-hmm. Was that maybe a placeholder name, and they were going to go back? I hope so.
Oh,
we need
dear.
Something to call these brokers on the black market. We'll just put that for now.
I'm going to harp on that for the rest of the
Yeah.
It's just too funny.
To be fair, if that's the biggest criticism we have of this story, they're doing pretty good, I gotta say.
Yeah, honestly. I'm really not complaining. I think I'm not saying that it's bad writing. I think it's hilarious. I think it's fantastic, and it's an interesting thing that maybe some people would just gloss over, but it got my attention immediately.
Totally. All right. Well, let's move into the final issue, issue number 5 now, where again we pick up where we were. Latinum is trapped behind this fire and is too scared to kind of come out. And Sisko is taking on more and more with this Borg component, and Bashir is getting more and more concerned about his health. But Bashir has to leave him because he has an idea of how to rescue Latinum. And this is a nice little callback to that game, that war-torn simulation that Bashir and O'Brien played on the holosuite, because Latinum was with them there, and Bashir thinks he can get Latinum to kind of remember that and trust him and do what he says, right? So Bashir leaves Sisko and, you know, trusts that Sisko is going to pull back and focus on just what he needs to focus on. We know that's not going to happen. He's taking on more and more and more, totally ignoring the tricorder that Bashir has left that's monitoring his vital signs, which all the little panels on are getting more and more red. So that's not good.
No, it is really not, because you're either going to have an aneurysm or an embolism, or, you know, your heart's going to explode. All of those things are possibilities.
But in a bit of good news, Bashir does manage to coax Latinum out from where he's kind of hiding there. And this gorgeous shot of him leaping through the flames and Bashir saying, "Good boy, laddie, who's the best dog? You are."
Because he is.
He is. He really is. It's kind of at this point when I'm reading it, I'm starting to wonder, where is Latinum now then? Like, where the crew is so enamored with him, Quark's not going to sell him to this person. Where is he? Anyway, that's kind of what's going through my mind as I'm reading this. They're not going to kill him off. They're not going to do something terrible like that.
They wouldn't dare.
No, exactly. So they come back to Sisko, who's not doing well, but he's tied into everything, but he's kind of passed out, it seems. He's not responsive, and they need to get the shields down. They need Sisko to do that. But it's Latinum who saves the day by licking Sisko's face and waking him up. And Sisko says, "Good dog."
Because, yes, dogs have, well, animals in general have instincts and intuition that we cannot hope to understand, because we can't communicate with them in their language. So that surprised me 0%. I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was perfect.
It was perfect. Exactly. So Sisko comes to and lowers the shields, and everyone gets back aboard the Defiant just in time as the ship explodes, and they manage to get away, and they've taken care of the transmission. All of that's gone and deleted, and so everything seems to be wrapped up in a nice little bow there. It's all good, except, of course, Starfleet still wants this Borg component, and they still have to figure out why Latinum doesn't appear in the rest of the episodes of Deep Space Nine. We do get this lovely reunion between Quark and Latinum, and Morin seems to be taking to Latinum quite a bit as well, which is nice. So Quark contacts this buyer, who turns out, I think it's a Betelgeusean, I think, which we first saw in Star Trek The Motion Picture and got a better look at in season 3 of Star Trek Discovery. There was a Cosmo, I think, was a Betelgeusean. At first I looked a little Riemann, but I was like, oh no, I think he's that other guy. They come up with a way to make this buyer not want Latinum anymore, and that's by making him less genetically perfect. So Bashir splices in an extra gene, and Latinum is no longer a purebred corgi. And Sisko, because of genetic engineering laws, is going to pretend he didn't hear any of that.
And, well, he should.
So that was a clever clever solution to that issue.
Agreed.
They do have to try and figure out who's going to take Latinum, right? And everyone has their excuses. Bashir can't. Dax says it would drive Worf nuts. O'Brien says, pretty sure Keiko would not like me for making this decision without her, but he does adopt a cat at one point without consulting her. So I don't know. But yeah, like we said, Morn is the one who takes possession of Laddie, or Laddie takes ownership of Morn, I guess we could say. So I thought there might be an issue with this, because I was curious where the episode Who Mourns for Morn takes place, but it takes place significantly before In the Pale Moonlight. So that episode took place before all of this, because in that episode, Morn is presumed dead. Quark inherits all of Morn's possessions. And I thought, hey, we didn't see Latinum in that episode. I wonder where that takes place. But all's good, because that takes place before all of this, so that hadn't happened yet. So, whew. Nice job on the writers for doing that, where I thought there might be an issue, and there isn't at all, because I don't understand how causality works. So I do wonder, I guess Morn has Laddie going forward after this point, which I think is wonderful. And the one thing that popped into my head also while I was reading this was, we see Morn's name under the list of like criminal elements in Star Trek Picard. So now in my mind, I have him like running heists and doing things with this little corgi just like trotting along behind him the whole time. He's Morn's little partner in crime. I kind of love it.
I love it too. And can you imagine what the authorities are thinking? It's the man with the dog.
Or like they pull heists on planets where, you know, keeping pets isn't a thing. They don't know about it. So like there's, you know, Morn and his co-conspirator, this other being that gets referred to as Latinum. That must be a code name, though. Who is this criminal mastermind who works with Morn?
Oh, you could do a whole series about that.
I really want a follow-up of like the adventures of Latinum and Morn.
I agree. I want that too.
But yeah, so the issue does end with Quark saying, you know, the big guy, Morn, loves Latinum so much he just won't shut up about it.
Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to involve Morn, you have to have a reference to how much he talks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Those Lurians, I tell you, chatterboxes.
Oh, man. They just will not shut up. Absolutely. So anyway, that's The Dog of War, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Do you have final thoughts and a rating for this story?
I wasn't sure what to expect with a miniseries entitled The Dog of War, especially with the first cover with everybody and that dog. And I'm just like, where is this going? But the first issue was very good in setting up where things were likely to go. But there was still a lot of discovery along the way. I really enjoyed this. It was funny and also dramatic. But I loved all of those, because everything fun revolved around Laddie.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody called him such a good boy. He's such a good boy. He's perfect boy. You know, and just, you know, all of this dramatic stuff going on. But a dog can just make you feel better. Because dogs. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it, that this dog is the thread that is connecting all of these things. And the fact that it was a corgi. So cute. So cute. So I liked the idea of the Borg device and what it was used for and all of the things that it could do. And It once again just goes to show, just because you can do a thing doesn't mean you should do a thing. And with this device, it was a thing that you should not do. And so it was rightfully destroyed. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah.
Because Sisko did make the right decision. Yeah, it was fun. It was dramatic. It was exhilarating. It was a little bit scary in some parts. It was a wild ride and not at all what I expected for being called the Dog of War. But I think it resolved nicely. And, you know, somebody just give me a little reference in another Deep Space Nine comic and tell me how Laddie's doing.
Yeah. So do you have a final rating?
Oh, gosh. It's so hard for me. I'm going to do, you know, one giant Brokers of the Black Market jacket.
That's great. That's really good. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. And I mean, it kind of, my feeling from that first cover, it was like, oh, I'm going to enjoy this because Deep Space Nine, a dog, it had the potential to be like overly cutesy and, you know, too much. But I don't think they did that. I think they did something that fits really well in with what we saw in Deep Space Nine in that period. I think this really does work as, like they say, a lost episode. And I really enjoyed so much, like the writing, the artwork, all of it comes together really, really well. I guess, yeah, we didn't really talk about the disposition of the Borg component, which you mentioned there. Sisko just says, it was broken in the rescue attempt. Whoops, smash it, please. And that's it. So like, I think, like you said, that was the right decision. Absolutely. It was too much power. Yeah. I mean, Starfleet could easily win the war with it, but then Starfleet could become the great empire that takes over the galaxy with it. You know, like we know there are Section 31 and those types that would just be salivating to get their hands on this, right? So yeah, no, destroy it. That's the best choice for sure. And yeah, I want to follow up too. I want to know what Latinum's up to. Such a good boy. So I'm going to give it one outing at Deep Space K9 because that looks like just the best day.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting that you talk about the too much power for anyone and how Starfleet could use it to take over the universe, because Sisko makes that comment in the beginning, the first issue, about what is this going to cost us? Are we going to win this, but at the cost of our humanity?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's exactly what that device was going to do.
Yeah.
So it all ties together.
Yeah, for sure. So I really enjoyed this. Now, I almost want to buy the graphic novel just because it was such a, I want to like lend this to my family and say, you need to read this, but I don't know. It's so good.
It's beautifully done. And I have the individual issues, of course, because I get all the Star Trek comics, but I think it would be lovely in a graphic novel form. Mm. So, you know, I'm not one to tell you what to do, Dan.
Absolutely.
And I leave the butt hanging in the air. I don't actually say it. I just...
Well, a butt hanging in the air is appropriate for a story about a corgi, too, because...
It sure is.
They've got cute little butts hanging out in the air, too.
They do.
All right. Well, thank you, Brandy, so much for joining me for this episode. This was a lot of fun. We'll have to have you back again very soon for more comics.
Yay!
But in the meantime, what are you up to? Where can people find you?
I do have a podcast called Boldly Go about Star Trek Strange New Worlds that will be back sometime this year. I was going to do some stuff starting last year, some character arc stuff and whatnot, and life got in the way, as it does. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping to restart that this year because there will be no new Strange New Worlds. No new Strange New Worlds? Yeah, that's right. I thought I had too many news in there for a second. So there's that. And then hopefully my Discovery podcast with my husband and our friend Christopher will be back for Discovery Season 5. I don't know what Chris's schedule is looking like yet, so I hope that he can join us because he's just so much fun to have around, and I feel we have a really good dynamic. And that's called What the Future Holds, a Star Trek Discovery podcast. You can find those where you find podcasts. And you can find me on Twitter, BrandyWine12, though I'm almost never on social media anymore because it's just too much.
Mm-hmm. It's a hellscape.
I mainly watch cat videos on Instagram. So I'm going to just pimp this really, really fast. There's this account on Instagram that I adore that's called Rockstar, but the O and the A are X's. So it's this man who just suddenly found that he was very good at doing voiceover work. And people send him videos, funny videos of their pets, and he dubs in voices for the pets. And he is extremely talented. And everything he does is hilarious. It's amazing. You got to check him out. It will make you smile. And in this current climate where everything is just kind of crap and you need something to smile, go hit up Rockstar because he's amazing. And so I'll yield the rest of my pimping to him.
I just checked out a little bit on YouTube, and yeah, it looks like that might be a cure for any day you're not feeling great. So that's awesome.
It is. It is. And yes, he does have a YouTube channel as well. So definitely subscribe to that because he is brilliant. He's brilliant at what he does, and it will always make you feel good.
Well, you can find me on Twitter and Facebook, of course, Kurtratz. You can find the podcast on the Positively Trek discussion group on Facebook. And of course, you can contact us, positivelytrek@gmail.com, and on Twitter @positivelytrek. I've been Dan Gunther. Thank you once again, Brandy Jackala, for joining me. We will see you all in the next episode that we do together for the Star Trek comics, which will be a few weeks down the road, but we'll be back doing it soon. Until then, as always, stay positive. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.